Ideas Have Consequences. The Cult of Charles Darwin, Part 2, by Mr. Cal Kalsbeek. We read in 1 Chronicles 12, verse 32, And of the children of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do, the heads of them were 200, and all their brethren were at their commandment. In the beginning was information. Charles Darwin could not have known that, so we will give him a pass. However, his modern-day disciples do know this, yet Scripture judges that they willingly are ignorant of it. 2 Peter 3, verse 5. Jonathan Sarfati explains their predicament. The main scientific objection to evolution is not about whether changes occur through time, and neither is it about the size of the change. It isn't even about whether natural selection happens. The key issue is the type of change required. To change microbes into men requires changes that increase the genetic information content. The 3 billion DNA letters stored in each human cell nucleus convey a great deal more information, known as specified complexity, than the 500,000 DNA letters of the simplest self-producing organism. The DNA sequences in a higher organism, such as a human being or a horse, for instance, code for structures and functions unknown in the sort of primitive first cell from which all other organisms are said to have evolved. All the alleged proofs of evolution in action to date do not show that functional new information is added to genes. Rather, they involve sorting and or loss of information. To claim that mere changes proves that such information increasing change will occur is like saying that because a merchant can sell goods, he will sell them for a profit. The origin of information is an insurmountable problem for bacteria to biologists' evolution. Information theory is a whole new branch of science that has effectively destroyed the last underpinnings of evolution, explained fully in the monumental work In the Beginning Was Information by Dr. Werner Gitt. You see the problem. Darwin merely had to explain evolution in terms of natural selection. His modern-day disciples need to explain it in terms of DNA and the necessary additional information that would enable those evolutionary changes to take place. If indeed evolution from bacteria to biologist did take place, and a cell of the simplest self-producing organism contains only 500,000 letters of DNA, while a cell of the biologist contains 3 billion letters of DNA, where did the additional 2,999,500,000 letters of DNA come from? There is an answer to that question, but it's an answer the evolutionist refuses to consider. Evolutionist Charles Singer is very candid in explaining the reason why. Evolution is perhaps unique among major scientific theories in that the appeal for its acceptance is not that there is evidence of it, but that any other proposed interpretation of the data is incredible. Confirming these thoughts of Singer in more detail, evolutionary authority Richard Lewontin writes this: We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs, in spite of its failure to fulfill many of its extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. It is not that the methods and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation of the phenomenal world, but, on the contrary, that we are forced by our prior adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts that produce material explanations, no matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated. Moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Little wonder, then, that Richard Dawkins and many other evolutionists more and more distanced themselves from debating the issues and instead advanced their case with other methods. If the evolutionists adhere to the a priori position that everything must be explained in terms of material causes, then no amount of new information will change that position. And if the new information contradicts the position of the evolutionists, it stands to reason that they will look to other, more effective, means to accomplish their purpose. Richard Dawkins, chief present-day apologist for Charles Darwin, demonstrates that in his latest book, The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. Yes, Dawkins' book includes the usual evolutionistic proofs for a materialistic explanation of the cosmos, but it also includes his attempts to silence the critics of bacteria to biologist evolution. Let's examine some of his methods. Although it is not new to mock those who hold to the Bible's teaching on origins, Dawkins appears to carry it to a new level. He is very pointed in his rants against Bible believers, or, as he calls them, history deniers. In the process, he proves to be exceptionally skilled at knocking down straw men. His mockery of the biblical account of the post-flood dispersion of animals will illustrate this. An ancestral lemur, again very possibly just a single species, found itself in Madagascar. Now there are 37 species of lemur. And they are all, every last one of them, in Madagascar. There are no lemurs anywhere else in the world. How on earth do the 40% history deniers think that this state of affairs came about? Did all 37 or more species of lemur troop in body down Noah's gangplank and hightail it for Madagascar, leaving not a single straggler by the wayside anywhere throughout the length and breadth of Africa? Good story, Rich, but wherever did you get the idea that these supposed history deniers believe that all the present-day species, Dawkins' term, of lemurs were on the ark? Could it be that only one lemur kind, the biblical term used in Genesis 1, was on the ark, migrated to Madagascar, and there produced the other varieties of lemurs? Dawkins can also be very condescending. He gives us a taste of that in Chapter 4, titled Science and Slow Time. If the history deniers who doubt the fact of evolution are ignorant of biology, those who think the world began less than 10,000 years ago are worse than ignorant. They are deluded to the point of perversity. Richard Dawkins is not the only evolutionist using this approach. Others try to marginalize the opposition by portraying them as mentally imbalanced. James J. D. Luce, the assistant executive director of Fundamentalists Anonymous, claims that the fundamentalist experience can be a serious mental health hazard to perhaps millions of people. His organization works to heal Christians of their mental disorder, their Christian worldview. Harvard's Edward O. Wilson takes us a step further, describing Christianity as one of the unmitigated evils of the world. Intimidation is another method employed by Dawkins and his ilk against those so-called history deniers. The intimidation method works something like this. Either you tow the bacteria to biologist evolutionary line, or else. And the or else can very really mean anything from refusal to publish your work to loss of job. If one were to complain that this is religious discrimination, Eugene Scott, director of the National Center for Science Education, would respond, "You can't discriminate based on religion. You can discriminate based upon scientific views. It's perfectly legitimate to discriminate against a candidate based on whether that candidate's scientific views are acceptable to the discipline." A few examples will demonstrate the practice of religious discrimination and the cost of daring to question the cult of Charles Darwin. 1. A former editor of a Smithsonian publication allowed the publishing of an anti-Darwinian study which included the following statements. Quote, in the last decade or so, a host of scientific essays and books have questioned the efficacy of natural selection and mutation, or genetic mistakes, as a mechanism for generating morphological novelty, as even a brief literature survey will establish. Genetics might be adequate for explaining microevolution, but microevolutionary changes in gene frequency were not seen as able to turn a reptile into a mammal or to convert a fish into an amphibian. Microevolution looks at adaptations that concern the survival of the fittest, not the arrival of the fittest. The origin of species, Darwin's problem, remains unsolved. Unquote. Notice it was a former editor of a Smithsonian publication who allowed that to be published. That dastardly deed of allowing the cult of Darwin to be questioned cost him his job. 2. In his book, Slaughter of the Dissidents, Jerry Bergman presents numerous stories of how Darwin doubters have been systematically expelled from the academic community. Dr. Carolyn Crocker is just one of the victims he writes about. Crocker's problem began after she mentioned intelligent design in her cell biology class at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. One student filed an accusation that Crocker was teaching creationism, although she is not even a creationist. Numerous students and an attorney wrote letters in her defense, noting that she had simply discussed her doubts about Darwin. But Crocker was soon terminated from her position. During her 5-year career at George Mason, she had received commendations for her high student ratings, been awarded 3 grants, and authored a cell biology workbook. The message is crystal clear: join the cult of Darwin, or else. 3. Christian astronomer Martin Gaskell's impeccable credentials made him the obvious choice for the director of a new student observatory at the University of Kentucky. After the position had been awarded to another candidate, it came to light that Gaskell's religious beliefs, or theistic evolution, had been used to exempt him from further consideration. Subsequent challenges by Gaskell earned him a $125,000 settlement with the university. Richard Dawkins deftly discards the injustice by saying, even if a doctor's belief in the stork theory of reproduction is technically irrelevant to his competence as an eye surgeon, it tells you something about him. It is revealing. It is relevant, in a general way, to whether we would wish him to treat us or teach us. Numerous other instances of religious discrimination could be cited that demonstrate how costly it can be for anyone, Christian or otherwise, to dare to challenge the cult of Charles Darwin. But maybe of more interest to standard-bearer readers is Dawkins' theological, philosophical case against the creation model. Here Dawkins displays an arrogance that is, to put it mildly, breathtaking. His basic premise is that since he sees flaws in the design of much that exists, they could not have been created by a perfect designer. Thus, evolution is the only viable choice. Following are a few of the numerous design flaws that Dawkins has discovered and included in his book, The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. 1. God, Dawkins, has discovered the problem of the backwardly wired retina. Quote, the eye's photocells are pointing backwards, away from the scene being looked at. The wires connecting the photocells to the brain run over all the surface of the retina, so the right light rays have to pass through a carpet of massed wires before they hit the photocells. That doesn't make sense. Unquote. Page 354. 2. And Dawkins said about those problematic blind spots, quote, the hole filled with nerves is called the blind spot, because it is blind, but spot is too flattering, for it is quite large, more like a blind patch. Once again, send it back. It's not just bad design, it's the design of a complete idiot. page 354. 3. And Dawkins said about one laryngeal nerve, it, quote, goes to the larynx via an astonishing detour. It drives right down into the chest, loops around one of the main arteries leaving the heart, and then heads back up the neck to its destination. If you think of it as the product of design, the recurrent laryngeal nerve is a disgrace. Page 356. 4. And Dawkins said, quote, the overwhelming impression you get from surveying the innards of a large animal is that it is a mess. A decent designer would never have perpetuated anything of the shambles that is the crisscrossing maze of arteries, veins, nerves, intestines, wads of fat and muscle, mesenteries, and more. Page 371. And 5. And Dawkins said, quote, if God were responsible for the back design, you'll have to concede that it wasn't one of his best moments and must have been a deadline rush at the end of the 6 days. Unquote, page 369. Rather than move on to Dawkins' problems with the koala's pouch, wasteful trees, flightless birds, sightless eyes, goosebumps, and more, we will leave that as a homework assignment for the interested reader. Obtain a copy of Jonathan Sarfati's book, The Greatest Hoax on Earth, and read some of his insightful responses to Dawkins' dogmatics. Clearly, for modern-day Issachar to question the cult of Charles Darwin is to incur the scorn and condescension of Richard Dawkins and his like, and maybe even lose his job. However, there are more serious problems with the cult of Charles Darwin, but they must wait until our next installment. In the meantime, the reader might want to ponder this observation of a Chinese paleontologist. Quote, in China we can criticize Darwin, but not the government. In America, you can criticize the government, but not Darwin. Unquote. To be continued.